Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Thank you so much for all your calls and comments coming in so far on the show today. Lots of you messaging in as it relates to the parking issues or conversations that are happening in Buncrana, and I will get to those as this morning wears on. In fact, I can bring in a couple right now. Traffic in Buncrana is chaos. The main street has to return to two-way traffic. The place is constantly jammed up. How would that work, I wonder? Is it wide enough for two-way traffic? Nicholas, half-hour parking is invaluable for doing your weekly things with banks and pensions and shopping. If it was just like the 15 minutes, we'd be left like Benny Hill to get everything done, from long-time Buncrana resident. Another, I'm not a driver, but this is ridiculous. Reducing the free parking time to 15 minutes. Yes, Greg, it will not help the business people. And although Nicholas is from the town, does he give a heck? Well, of course he does. And you know, it is not easy sometimes to come on and express a view that, you know, is not necessarily as popular as another. And respect to that. I parked in Strabane yesterday for 6 minutes. It cost me 78 pence. I know it's not a lot in the grand scheme of things, but that is over 10p a minute. I paid through the parking app, which mostly works out slightly cheaper. I would have been able to park for well over an hour before for about £1.50. Another listener says, I live in Clonmany. I'd rather go to Carn Donata's shop. It's a bigger town and I don't pay anything for parking. How do they maintain their town with no charges at all? And on they go. Right, OK, this week's Wellness Wednesday, we are joined in studio by Oran Carlin, who was born with a rare genetic blood disorder, which means he cannot go out in natural light. And we're also joined in studio by his mum, Brenda. Brenda, good morning to you. Thanks so much for calling in.
Good morning, Greg.
And Oran, how are you keeping?
I'm good.
OK, so talk to us, Brenda, first, if you don't mind, about Oran's condition. Or maybe, Oran, you'd prefer to talk about it. I don't want to be presumptuous.
You want me to start?
Yeah, go on. You go ahead, Brenda.
Yeah, so he was born with a genetic blood disorder called erythropoietic protoporphyria. And normally you wouldn't start showing symptoms until you're 4 years old. But Oran started displaying the symptoms from he was two. So he started off just feeling really a lot of pain, and his arms and legs would have swollen up when he was young. So it took a couple of years, and then he was diagnosed with a genetic condition. So he has inherited the gene from myself and my husband, which has given him the condition.
But do you and your husband have the condition?
No, or it's so, just Oran, because we have two chromosomes. So I have a normal and a deletion, which means that doesn't affect me. Mm-hmm. My husband has the C gene and a normal, so it doesn't affect him. But Oran got my deletion gene and my husband's C gene, which has given him the severity of the case.
Wow. So it's just a happenstance that you and he... Okay. Uh-huh. Right, okay.
Just bad luck.
And sorry, when did it first become apparent?
When he was about 2 years old.
Okay. And how long did it take to get a diagnosis?
Well, we had taken him to A&E a couple of times, and the paediatricians were baffled what was wrong with him. So at the time, they had thought it was maybe allergic to a plant out in the garden. So me and my husband started looking up and just Googling things that he might be allergic to. And then we just came upon this condition. And once we read it, he ticked every box for all the different symptoms. So we took the print out to the GP, and then we were referred to the paediatrician. And she listened to what we said, and I took a print out and asked her if she could do the blood test. And I actually was hoping that she was going to tell me he didn't have it. But when the test came back, he had it.
And before we chat to Oran, when we talk about natural sunlight, or natural light, sorry, is it sunlight or is it daylight? Like, for instance, can you block it with creams or...?
So what it is ultraviolet light. Mm-hmm. So basically, the ultraviolet light, porphyrin's build in his blood. So it's actually his blood that it reacts to. So the porphyrin's build in his blood, and then when the ultraviolet light goes through his skin, it reacts to the blood, and that causes like an inner itch first, and then severe pain. And then the next day, he'll get the swelling. So then his skin all stretches, and then with the skin stretching, it will split, and then it cuts from the inside out.
Wow.
That's like further down the line. That's a couple of days into the reaction.
Yeah.
But once he has that first reaction, he cannot go out in any light at all then for at least 24 hours.
Unbelievable.
And the worst case was a week. He had to sit in the dark. So that whenever he was young and he had a reaction and his hands were swollen, I thought, well, I'll take him to Jungle King. So he'd be indoor playing. But you see these lights here above?
Yes.
His hands started reacting to the artificial lights because they already had, he was already
so
affected.
So that means can't sit in the front room watch TV. It has
not,
to be
not
in the
after.
Dark
it has to be in the dark once he has had a reaction until it settles down.
Oren, and as a young fella too, how does this affect you? Or I mean, I know you've lived with it all of your life, and it's your normal, I suppose you could say. But that mm-hmm. doesn't take away the fact that it impacts on your life, and you have to change how you live in.
No, because I play football, and then I've had Sony, and like I just can't go in. Mm. Just sit on where everybody else could play it.
Especially if you have a football match.
A football match.
And that, I mean, obviously you're trying to protect yourself from a physical reaction, but it must be very mentally frustrating for you.
It is.
Because, I mean, you're there, you're fit, you're healthy, you could run to Timbuktu, but you've got this thing that prevents you from being able to engage like you would like to.
Just holds you back from everything.
And is this something that you would ever grow out of, Oren?
No.
So this is something that's going to be a part of your life
forever,
okay. What about treatments, Brenda?
Yeah, so there is one only successful treatment called Sinesse.
Mm.
And at the minute, it's an implant, and they're working on a tablet form. And so far, it's only available to 18-year-olds. And it is still not available in the UK or Ireland. So we're trying to make his condition aware so that maybe NICE could pass it. And when he's 18, he could get the implant.
And what is the... what? How is it working, if you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, what kind of case studies are you hearing? Is it really helping people?
Yeah, so NICE is saying that there's not enough evidence and it's not cost effective. But America, China, Israel, Germany, Switzerland, Netherlands, Austria and Italy are all using it to treat their EPP patients successfully. And now Australia has just passed, their health body has just passed it, so it will soon be given out to their EP patients. And for Oren and for us, that is our only hope, that that be passed by he's 18 and then...
I wonder why to wait. Is it over 18s in the countries that you mentioned generally?
Over 18s. They're working on like paediatrics now, you know, to get it on a younger age.
Mm.
But that nothing, they're just still working on them trials, so I don't know anything about that yet.
And Oren, what age are you now?
15.
Right, okay, so it seems like forever away, but it's actually only around the corner, isn't it? And the bottom line is unless you get awareness out there or you organise with other people who are affected, NICE are going to look at this and go, well, it's only a couple of people, we'll focus on something else. And unfortunately, you have to be the noisiest wheel sometimes to get the oil, Brenda.
So they're trying to get it passed with NICE since 2015. And it's been turned down twice since it was stalled there. The appeal was stalled for 4 years. And they've just made a decision again in May. And their recommendation for Oren and anybody with EPP is don't go out in the light. So
it just must be so frustrating.
So frustrating.
You know, because there's so much that people have that there's no cure for or there's no help or there's no advancement. Yet here we have other people successfully on this implant and hopefully the oral drug in the future living normal lives. And then you'll see the frustration that Oren's going to have. I mean, all of us would have, unless you're Superman. You know, we'd all be really frustrated by it. Like, you aren't Superman, are you? No? Okay. Just in case it was...
No, and it's so hard watching him because, like, last year... We had went to do pier jumping and it wasn't a sunny day, but we thought it'll be good enough for Oren. We could maybe get a half an hour.
Mm.
But he was so worried about getting reaction to the sunlight.
Of course he would be,
that he got himself worked on his stit and took about 25 minutes to talk him round to leaving the car. So, I mean, that's not fair.
Yeah, but that's a completely normal reaction, Oren. It's frustrating, but I think we'd all feel that way. So can you describe how it feels? Are you the first to know that the UV light started to have this reaction, or your body started to have this reaction to the UV light?
It feels like it's like an itch.
Yeah.
But whenever you itch it, it's just sore, like very sore.
And it's an itch you can't scratch.
Yeah.
So it's like having your leg in a cast with an itch and you can it's like scratching the outside of the cast, it's doing nothing.
And it just gets worse and worse. And
you described it as an inner itch, like an itch inside yourself that you can't scratch.
But you've successfully managed to spot the early signs and prevent any sort of escalation of it, have you, Orin?
We try, but but the weller is so unpredictable that sometimes he still has the reaction, even with all the precautions that we take.
Family holidays, presumably, certainly so, to sunny destinations are off the...
Well, at the start, we didn't go for years. And then whenever he was younger, me and my husband decided that our job was to make him have as normal a life as possible.
Okay.
So we tried to work around going in the winter months when the sun would go down in the other countries at like 5 p.m. so he could wear shorts and T-shirts, go out in the dark for his meals.
Yeah.
We would go day...
Would an umbrella be? Would you? Is that the...
At the minute he wears hats. He has a sun snood.
Yes.
He has gloves and he's always covered
and
like long sleeves.
And it's a solution, but you want to feel the same as everybody else does as much as possible. Uh-huh. Right, okay. So the hope is that really, I think if I'm reading the room correctly, Brenda, is that, you know, the chances of maybe Oren getting this now or 16 is not, it's to make sure that this is available for people like Oren when he hits 18.
Yeah.
That's the best case scenario.
That's exactly what
a miracle could
for.
Happen, but... Yeah.
So whenever he was 8, we first read about SNS. And back then, I always said to my husband, oh, it'll be okay, sure, there's plenty of years. It'll definitely pass by the time he's 18. And then just whenever we got the wee video on May from the BPA, kind of from Clenuville, telling us that the appeal was turned down again, then it just made us so angry and frustrated. We thought, we need to do something for this Wayne, you know.
Yeah. Okay, and we're going to talk about fundraiser coming up and how people can support it. I'm just trying to get a sense of how many people are affected by EPP across the north. Maybe it's where you might have the figures for.
Well, 5 years ago, we were at a BPA meeting, which is the British Porphyria Association. Mm-hmm. But because there is none in Ireland, they have now taken Ireland under their wing.
Under the wing, aye.
So 5 years ago, there was 13 people with EPP in the whole of Ireland. And they're roughly, it be 1 in 140,000.
So it's rare, but it's not rare sort of thing. It's great. It's actually quite interesting that they have made such advances on something that is relatively rare, because sometimes, you know, they focus on where they're going to make tons of money, these drug companies. And just once again, someone texted in, what were the early signs and symptoms and from what age? As rare as it is, you just never know. Someone wants you to just remind us of that again.
Yep, so whenever he was wee, he would have been out playing in the sun and with shorts and T-shirts on. And then he just would have screamed, would have cried for no reason. And then eventually his arms, whatever part of the body is exposed, is where he would swell up. So the blood vessels leak and that's what causes the swelling. And that was the very early stages.
Okay.
So we were always told we were so lucky to get him diagnosed so young.
Yeah, I was
thinking
that.
Because there's other sufferers who be adults before they know.
Or maybe never find out.
Maybe never. So even if this helps someone else know the symptoms.
For sure, I think so, yeah. Because we talk about it being rare, but that's rare because of the cases we know. It might not be quite as rare. And that's all the part of what you're doing at the moment. Right, talk to us about the fundraising then for the BPA, which is the British...
Porphyria Association,
but it is...
They have taken in Ireland
because
now.
Because obviously, that's it. So what are you doing?
So we're doing a sponsored walk on this Sunday, the 20th, to the Stairway to Heaven in County Fermanagh. So our friends and family are getting a bus down and we're going to do the walk, which is approximately 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just taking sponsorship for an aid of the BPA.
Okay, and donations can be made online to Brenda's Just Giving page, Oren's fundraiser for the British Porphyria Association.
Porphyria Association.
But I'd say if you go Oren's fundraiser for the British search, it'll be there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, is there anything you want to say, Oren?
That is.
I don't want you to leave here and think, why didn't he ask me that? Well, that's perfectly fine too. Less is more.
What about your hopes for when you're 18?
Hope it gets released.
I think so.
Get on with your life.
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
It's tough, you know, and fair play to you, Oren. And hopefully there is light at the end of the tunnel for when you hit 18. And thanks to the work of your mother and others in the BPA. If you have other children, do they automatically?
I have one other daughter, but she had a 1 in 4 chance. So she's obviously gotten, she's Eller like me, yes. the deletion on the normal, yeah. or my husband with the C
so
gene
it's not
on the
a
normal.
Given that the genes met.
Or she could have two
way.
Normals. He was just unlucky to get right. both our fault genes, but he's definitely passing it on.
Yeah, oh, for yeah. sure, really.
So he only has the deletion or the C gene, so he's definitely passing one limb on. So we met with a geneticist, so he whenever he meets his partner.
The love of his life.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully, the love of your life.
She could get a blood test done and make sure that she hasn't got similar genetic
faults.
That's
really interesting. So it's even yeah. if they're, you know, it's something that has to be considered yeah. Moving forward. Uh-huh. Brenda, it's been lovely having you on the show.
Thank you.
I do
much.
Hope all your efforts do pay off, and that it wouldn't be lovely, you know, to sort of have that to look forward to.
Yeah, definitely.
And you can sort of see that, right, okay, this is what I can do going forward. So I really hope it happens for you and everyone else affected yeah. by EPP. So that's Wellness Wednesday. We were chatting to Oren Carlin and his mother, Brendan. And if you want to support the BPA, you can donate to Brenda's Just Giving page. It's Oren's fundraiser for the British Porphyria.
Yeah.
Oh, so close. Association. All right. Yeah. Okay, and we'll link that on our socials, which is probably much handier than me stumbling my way through it every time. Yeah. Thanks That's both great. Of
Thank
you for travelling down
could
to
I
see
also
us. Of course,
just,
anything you want.
Could I thank the Northern Ireland Rare Diseases Partnership mm-hmm. for helping us getting our awareness out as well, and also Partridge Pear Tree and the Image Printing,
yeah.
Image Branton, that
and
helped us
too.
The T-shirts.
I presume you didn't see advocacy in your future a few years ago. Did you see having to advocate and campaign?
No, never.
Is that something you were...
Never.
It just is thrust
no.
upon you as well?
Yeah, never.
All right, well done.
Thank
okay,
you very
so
much. Thank
indeed.
You.
Bye-bye.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Thanks to Brendan and Oren again. Kieran O'Donnell's going to be joining us in a bit, but I want to get through some of your comments. Get to them. Right, okay, Buncrana needs a bypass, says a caller. Hi Greg, never mind the 30 minutes parking. One of the major issues in Buncrana is the traffic delays coming in from the Cockhill Road direction. All roads leading to Main Street fork at the bottom of the West End Buncrana, leading to long and lengthy traffic delays. It can take upwards of 15 minutes sometimes to get through the town. The council would be better served addressing these issues first and foremost, in my opinion. A caller says, does Nicholas Crossan want Buncrana closed down? And it sickens me when he says what's good for Buncrana. What did he and his fellow councillors do when the likes of Fruit of the Loom closed down? This is the same Nicholas Crossan who wanted to bypass the town but didn't get support. There are others that still call for that. But as I say, I'm not here to sort of represent Councillor Nicholas Crossan, but, you know, people should be able to express a view that may be against the norm without anything getting personal anyway. But I'm not saying you are, but, you know, we need to make sure we make the right decision. And the way we make the right decision is considering all different options. I think a half hour free parking is too long. 15 minutes is adequate for most shopping, other than big shopping where there usually is a large free car park. You say that, though, but then Philomena comments on social media, 15 is too short. It's stressful to make sure to have to get back to your car. Went around Buncrana three times to get a parking spot. Someone who's slow at walking has to park way down the street to go, and there's a queue, especially at Christmas. So my point being, and thanks, Philomena, for your comment there on Facebook as well, my point being is as well, we also have to consider that not everybody is as quick on their feet or doesn't want to be rushing around. And we have to make sure that whatever we do is inclusive of not just businesses, but people with various abilities as well. What about people living on street in apartments with a permit? I'm not familiar with that. I'm not sure how much... this is a good suggestion, actually, that even if you're parking for free, that you print off a ticket and the time you parked there to begin with is on the ticket. I've not heard that one before. And I'm not saying it's a good fit for Buncrana, but that's a blooming good idea. So even if you're only parked for half an hour, you have to print a ticket, and the ticket, your half an hour starts from when you put that ticket on. So it's free, right? But it's very clear when that ticket's expired. I like that idea. I don't know why. It just seems clever. Whether it's good or bad for the problem we're talking about, I don't know. But everyone who parks prints a ticket, and the first half hour is free. I like it. Okay, it's clever. Should be a sign on the machine saying your parking payment helps fund this and that. Let people know where it's going. Yeah, it would be useful just to have that information. I'm not sure whether it would encourage more or less people to pay for their parking. I have a comment to add to the conversation about parking in Buncrana. There are other additional problems ignored by the council. I live on a street in Buncrana where Paid parking is in place as residents were entitled to a residence parking permit, which we renew annually. My husband has a work van which is not entitled to a permit according to the council, which means he cannot park outside our home without running the risk of fines, which has happened on a few occasions. Now, just on relation to that, if it was a car, would he be able to get a permit? Is it the fact that it's a van that he can't get a permit? Just if you could clarify that, because I'm kind of interested about that. Or is it the fact that only one vehicle can be registered per premises? Let me know. But they go on to say, another issue is my neighbours are all very elderly, many with carers and family members who are required to stay with them overnight and during the day. As there's no guest permit system, like the area I used to live in London, it means that carers and family members have to pay to care for their loved ones. It's amazing, you know, when things like this don't affect you and they don't affect me, that you just sort of be oblivious to these little issues, but they're not insignificant either. If you're heading from Derry to Buncrana, there's a large tailback at Lisfannan. I'm sitting here for 25 minutes. I'm going nowhere. Now, I'm not sure if that's changed or is still the case, but let us know. Right, we are going to go to business matters, of course, in a mo. But first, we're going to go to Michaela Clark from the newsroom. Hey, Michaela, how are you getting on?
Good, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, I used to go down to McGill Summer School, but my circumstances have changed. You're heading down there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unique because there are other summer schools around the country, but this is a particularly well-regarded one, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems to attract so many every year. And even looking at the schedules in previous years, I've always been dying to go. Because the things, it's really thought-provoking, the topics they have. Like this year, the theme is a new global order, precarious and dangerous. And like we start today with the war in Ukraine, and then it moves on to China, and we talk about Ireland's future and Europe as well. So yeah, it's good. Mm. And like people come, well, Brendan Boyle, the congressman, was due to come, but people generally come from all over the world to it.
Yeah, some might feel it's like just the Dublin bubble locating to Donegal. I don't know, are any local newspaper journalists, any radio... This is not a question.
Yeah.
local radio journalists invited to attend, or is it just the Irish Times, the Irish Independent, and the politicians that they're used to use? But we'll ask you afterwards,
yeah.
Right? The proof of the pudding's in the eating.
Yeah, so we will see afterwards. Well,
see.
I'm going anyway. I haven't been invited, but I'm going.
It's very, very interesting. I just wonder. I've never been asked to participate. I'm not sure of you.
No.
I don't know. I don't know any of the newspaper if they're invited or not. But anyway, that be that as it may. I'm not. I don't want to be. I'm just saying. It starts today.
Today,
so what's happening today? You're heading down at 3. So what's the topic of conversation today?
We start with the Ukraine war today, and the ambassador of Ukraine to Ireland is going to be there, and there's going to be later on some music and culture events, Ukrainian music and culture events, and then it'll finish with the question later on, how and when will the war in Ukraine end? So there's a number of professors that will be there to discuss that. So today focuses solely on Ukraine.
Okay, interesting. Tomorrow?
Tomorrow then it is the first topic is how to restore peace and harmony to a dangerously distressed world and the role of China. I heard your discussion earlier about how even events in China affect, you know, through medication. Mm. So it will be interesting to hear how it affects Ireland and what can happen there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they pull the strings, let's face it, in many areas, be it technology, the phone in your pocket, or the medicine would take. And that's, what day is today?
Today's Wednesday.
Right. So that's in
Thursday.
The morning. In the afternoon, then, they like the European Union down at the McGill Summer School. That's up for conversation.
Yeah, so Maureen McGuinness is going to be there along with Professor Bridget Laffin and Tony Connolly, the European editor of RT in Brussels. So it'll be a panel discussion about the European Union and how they're fulfilling their mission.
Mm-hmm. And then into the evening, the 23rd annual Hume Lecture. And you mentioned Brendan Boyle in attendance. I think he is the last person, elected politician over there who is the son of an Irish person.
Yeah.
You know, many claim to be Irish, but I think he's the last serving elected rep there.
Right.
He's actually second generation.
Yeah.
But anyway, go
caused
ahead.
A bit of controversy because there was planned protests. I don't know if they are going ahead now. He was due to be there in person. So there's planned pro-Palestinian protests, mm-hmm. Because he sponsored an anti-BDS bill aimed at punishing companies that boycott Israeli goods. So,
oh, he opposed that, did he? That's really quite interesting.
Sponsored it. Yeah.
So, actually, I wonder, will there be many protests?
Well, he's appearing virtually now, so we don't know. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Now, I don't know if it's in relation to the planned protest, but Joe Mahon said last week his wife was going through surgery, so...
Okay, yeah, I'm sure that's the reason. But, you know, as I say, there's a lot of people down there. There's a lot of big issues in Donegal as well, and some of the people with influence on that. So on to Friday, then. The future of Russia and its place in the world, post-war, presumably, of course.
Yeah, so that'll be, I'm sure a lot of people will be interested in that, to see what is discussed and kind of as it relates to the war in Ukraine. And then it moves on then to a conversation with Senator Michael McDowell. And then there is, in the afternoon, the Heaney and Freel on the 10th anniversary of Seamus Heaney's passing. There's an event there, and then we will look at Ireland and its future. So there'll be a number of politicians from the North and South taking part in that one.
And Ireland, the future then, Charlie McConnell's amongst those. There's not an awful lot of Donegal in this, is there?
No.
Are the council still financially backing the McGill?
I think they do sponsor it, yeah.
Right, okay.
There's not many at all.
No, not really. Oh, no. Actually, now it's all Irish Times journalists, RTE journalists, which is all grand. That's fantastic if you're into that type of thing, which you are, and you're going to go and report on it, because I'll tell you one thing will come out of it is news.
Yes, plenty.
And you are not only going to be reporting extensively for the news, because that's what you're paid to do. No, I'm only joking. because obviously you're down there for that. But also, too, you're going to have a bit of a blog going on our website as well, which I think... Are you going to do a bit of colour to it as well? Or is it just going to be someone said that just to give us a sense of what's going on?
No, we're
going to
put in some pictures as well, hopefully. And well, just as much as accessible. Yeah. When I get down there, and we'll put in like our interviews and stuff, but we'll post them separately as well. And they'll be on air too.
And they'll all be in this blog. Okay, which will hopefully get pinned up, because I think it's going to be really interesting. And as I say, I've been down to a few of them. I always find them interesting. I'm just getting a bit older and cynical, and I would like to see a panel discussion about defective concrete. But anyway,
maybe next year.
Okay, but that's me. But that being said, I have a lot of respect for those involved and the organisers and Dr. Mulholland as well. But I can't sit here and think something and not saying, because that would be dishonest to the listeners, and might not be popular, but you know what? I have to be honest. Okay, Michaela, enjoy it. I look forward to hearing the reports. I look forward to following this blog to get a sense of what's going on there, as well as the actual news story. So I really appreciate your time. You're heading down there. Kicks off at three,
yeah.
All right, have a lovely time.
Thank you.
Plenty's is beautiful. It's up there in my top 10 of places I like across our region.
This matters in association with ATU Donegal Faculty of Business. Now is the time to realise your potential by enrolling on the part-time degree in business. Only 3 years, with one evening per week on campus and another online. Open up your future by contacting the faculty office on 91862006 or visit lyit.ie today.
Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Kieran O'Donnell is presenter of Business Matters. You heard the sting. That means he's in studio. Hi, Kieran.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
Good. You're welcome back from your...
Oh, my fantastic
your holiday.
Holidays. Costa del Dunlo, Costa del Dannings, Costa del Lahey. Keeping it local.
Good man.
I'm all about the local, you know.
Yeah, right.
Right, rental prices, asking prices.
Yeah. The average price of renting a house in Donegal, Greg, has increased by 22% compared to August 22, according to the latest report from daft.ie. So nowadays, people can expect to pay an average of €1,077 to rent a home in the county, and that figure represents a significant jump of 12% since the turn of the year. And just in relation to the buying and selling of house prices, the average price of a house in Donegal is now €170,000. That's according to a new report by the data technology startup GeoWax. So the findings show that Wicklow is now the most expensive county to buy a house. Average price in the Garden County is €425,000, while our neighbouring county, Leitrim, is the cheapest at €151,000.
You know, I would suspect that there's not an awful lot of movement in the property market here in Donegal, and what movement there is are people snapping up those 120, 130, 140,000 fixer uppers. I can see that. I can see that average house price going up really quite quickly, because I think you would struggle to go out, if that's an average, you'd struggle now to go out and buy much property around the county for under 170k. Kieran, what's your feelings?
Yeah, I suppose supply and demand is really what you're talking about, Greg. The prices at the minute don't seem to have jumped an awful lot. I've been keeping a fair close eye, and there hasn't been any massive movement on it yet compared to the rental. And I suppose that's why I sort of tied the two of them together under that one brief there, because, you know, it's up a fifth since last year, and it's up 8% since the turn of the year.
Well, you're getting now, it depends on your mortgage and your term and what, but you're getting now to the point whereby rent is getting mortgagey in terms of the cost in Donegal. But the property now is getting beyond, like, a €170,000 house. You actually have to have really quite a decent deposit and income to sort of reach that threshold. Now, I know there are schemes, but you can see even in our county how things are starting to become really out of reach. So my son's 20. He wants to move out, right? I presume he might, hopefully, if he did, or I don't know, hopefully he wants. But my point is that's a big chunk of anyone's income. Now, as I say, that is an average, but you can sort of see where the problems are starting to really come home to roost in what was traditionally seen as the cheaper part of the world to live in.
Yeah, and you throw in the cost of living crisis along with that too, Greg. That's where it becomes a bigger problem for people.
Right, OK. Development ongoing in Letterkenny, however?
Yeah, permission to demolish Glenany House on Letterkenny's Port Road to make way for a large residential and business development has been granted permission by Donegal County Council. The developers M&B Kelly Partnership say the scheme will provide a significant economic boost to Letterkenny, both during the construction phase and when it's operational. And William Donoghue and the associates have been appointed to design the 240,000 square foot scheme.
Is that on Tesco roundabout?
Yeah, it's just on the left hand side when you come into town there.
Right, I know.
It's a major development, and it's going to bring jobs both as the developer site and the creation, and when it's up and running.
All right, Errigal Bay are hoping to expand. What's their plans?
Yeah, the owners of Errigal Bay, Greg, the fish processing plant based at Minoneary in Carrick, are seeking to expand its facilities. Permission has been requested from Donegal County Council for a 28,000 square foot extension to the factory that was opened back in 1962 as a food processing co-op, and I think that was under Father McDyer's time and influence. And the company currently employs around 200 people.
All right, tell us about LeadTech and this application extension.
Yeah, the closing date for applications for LeadTech, that is the networking programme for Donegal tech companies with ambitions for growth, and is funded by Tech Northwest Skillnet, is this Friday, August the 22nd. The monthly training and network sessions will run from September 2023 to February 2024 at the CoLab in Letterkenny. The initiative will be led by Garrett Hart and Raylene McAteer, and Bobby Kerr has been lined up as one of the guest speakers. For more information on the programme, contact Siobhan on 086-2707-277 or email info@technorthwestskillnet.com.
And sorry to be an AH, it's February 24th to February 25th?
No.
It's already underway then?
No, sorry, it's September 23 to February
24. Sorry, I thought you said February. That's my mistake. Yeah. Sorry about that. Sorry. I wasn't
AH. Okay.
Right, inflation is dropping slightly again, just the old caveat. Yeah. It just means things aren't getting as expensive as quickly, but go on.
Yeah, the annual rate of inflation in July was 5.8%. That's down from 6.1% in the 12 months to the end of June, and that's according to new figures from the CSO office. However, the cost of goods and services rose by 0.2% in July when compared with June, and that's according to the Consumer Price Index. So that's just backing up exactly the point you made there, Greg. Higher prices in the recreation and culture sector, which rose by 3.4% in July, were linked to more expensive package holidays and concert tickets.
So we can blame Taylor Swift and Coldplay.
Well, that is a factor.
It's amazing, isn't it?
You know, if you're talking about going away, say, 3, 4, 5 years ago for a package and going to a concert and going away now, even over the last 12 months, the massive, like, the average cost of a package holiday rose by 64% compared to July 2022.
But these organisations and people are going to screw us to the point whereby they will have milked the cash cow. I hope they realise it.
I have a theory. I just wouldn't go. Full stop. Don't go.
But then they're going to come back and saying, oh, we need
But people don't think like that.
They'll say, oh, we need some support for this sector because things are slipping down, or, you know, we need to change VAT rates so artists come and perform here, because And you know what? The reason, they'll have done it all themselves. And let's remember that when the begging bowl comes out, because they're absolutely hammering us whilst it's the last sting of a dying wasp. It is just like before the recession, where 130% mortgages, free money, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's all starting to feel very familiar. And those who can get the must wring the last few quid out of us right now are doing it right now. All right. Okay. This week's podcast is a shop I actually really like.
Yeah. My guests this week are the owners of Alexander's of Bala Buffet, Joe and Tracy Alexander. The business was taken over from the McClure family by Joe's parents in 1960 and has been trading successfully since. Joe bought over the shop and became the sole owner in 1989. And in 2019, his wife Tracy, who had been a medical secretary for 23 years at a local practice, began to work full-time in the business. Alexander's, which has a coffee loft, a bookshop, a grocery section, a DIY department, currently employs a team of 15 people. And during our chat, I asked Joe what he thought he would be doing today if he had followed his childhood dream job.
Probably would have been an astronaut. I always liked working with my hands, you know, like making things, maybe working with wood. I probably would have liked to have been a carpenter. I still would do a good bit of the DIY work about the shop here, and I enjoy doing that. And it's sort of, I find it sort of de-stresses me times there. If you make a table or something, you know, it helps you.
And job satisfaction as well?
Definitely. You know, like most of the work in the coffee shop here, a good lot of this work we would have done working late in the evenings. And, you know, when you look around here now, and that's, you know, parts of the seating, parts of the floor and stuff like that, that was all stuff that was done late in the evenings.
Okay, Kieran, and you also chatted to Tracy.
Yeah, in this piece, Greg, Tracy talks about the decision to develop the coffee loft on the first floor of their premises on Balbuffet's Main Street 3 years ago.
Whenever I came in, I came over here, and that was in 2019, prior to the pandemic. And at that stage, we had a gift shop upstairs here, and it was, you know, we kind of felt we wanted to develop it more because there seemed to be a need for that in town. So I always had a notion as well about opening a coffee shop, and Joe always tried to put me off it. He said, you know, you work and you come home at the end of the week and your money's in the bank and you don't have to worry about staff and electricity and, you know, all of this. But I still had that sort of longing for it, and I would bake away at home all the time and just give it away.
So what was the deal clincher?
The deal clincher, I don't know, we talked about it then, and then we had friends that opened a coffee shop up in Port Stewart actually, and we had been talking to them, and the more we talked about it, the more we thought, you know what, we need something different. And I always loved the idea of books and coffee. I just thought that was just, if I was away on holiday somewhere or away visiting, this is the sort of shop I want to go into. And, you know, I love books, we love homewares, love food and bacon and hospitality and people. Oh, I just love working with people and meeting people every day.
Okay, so the full interviews with Joe and Tracy Alexander are available to download at highlandradio.com right now. They're on our website there, or on Spotify or iTunes. And the show goes out live, I suppose we call it now, even though it's pre-recorded because you've been out in Bala Buffet, but it's broadcast live. It's scheduled for Sunday, Kieran. Talk to me about that.
Yes, after the 6 o'clock news, Greg, on Sunday evening.
And if anyone would like to get in touch,
just drop me an email, please, businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Kieran, listen, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much indeed. Look forward to seeing you next week.
Good morning,
already.
Greg.
Take care.
Thanks.
All right, now just a little bit of breaking news. Donegal Garda Division is going to remain as a standalone division. There was a review ongoing, including leadership interviews, a consultation with internal and external stakeholders. It also, this review took into account the population and demographic changes in the country since the development of the original operation model in 2018. It looked at the number of incidents in the relevant division, along with the operational and community needs. Staffing and accommodation were also factored into the review. So the three county divisions reviewed were Leash, Offaly, Kildare, Waterford, Kilkenny, Carlo, and Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim. Now, under the revised divisional structures, the divisions will be the Donegal division. So the Donegal division is being retained. Now, I'm not sure how it's going to be enhanced or what have you, but anyway, it's not being chucked in, thankfully, with Sligo and Leitrim, which themselves will remain tied together. Leash, Offaly is another division. Kildare, Carlo, another division. Waterford, Kilkenny, another division. So things have been moved around a little, but Donegal is to be is going to be its own divisional structure which had been a call from many. So I think that will be seen as, I think that will be broadly welcomed. We shall see. All right, back with more in a sec. Now, we covered it on this programme before, some concerns, particularly around the Donegal Town area, about campervans parking in that area. And it is one, it's proving really popular. I presume it's talked about on forums and what have you and amongst people, and that's why it's become popular, because it's a decent place to park and you've got access to a thriving, buzzing town. But as I say, there is a negative tone to the conversation and coverage of these campervans pulling into the key park car park down there in Donegal Town, and I'm sure it's not exclusive to that area. Jason Carmody is chair of the Irish Motorhome Working Group, and I presume, Jason, it's a small enough country, a small enough community. This criticism has come across, you've come across it and would be aware of it.
Hi, Craig. Thanks for having me on, firstly. Yes, Craig. So basically, you know, motorhomes are very popular in this country, and there's a massive increase in ownership of motorhomes. And Donegal Town is a favourite spot for many motorhome owners to stop over. So there was kind of, I did see the publicity there last week on many forums, as you just said, and a small little bit of a negative kind of a tone to it, but a lot of positive things from people living in Donegal Town. I suppose the spin on it is, for Donegal Town, a lot of motorhome owners will stop off in an area, will park for the night, go out to local shops and restaurants and spend their money locally. So I suppose the thing is, a few people have mentioned that some of the motorhomes may be parking in two spaces.
Yeah, well, we've seen evidence of that. So that's not anecdotal. I know that has happened.
Yeah.
And it happened recently, you know. So either across three or four. I don't... Listen, they're wide, okay? So if you take up two parking in the way, I've seen big Land Rovers do the same thing. I wouldn't get too caught up about that personally. Now, that might not be popular, but anyway, that's my view. But I think certainly parking across spaces is a bit OTT.
Yes, indeed, yeah. And what we would say, if anyone sees someone doing that, they should contact the authorities. But that's a kind of a... Not a lot of people that I know would do that now, for sure. But the angle I would go at is Donegal Town Council and County Council now have the opportunity to put proper facilities for motorhomes in the town. For example, the Hub in Great Namana, before they ever had a motorhome specific parking down there, the town council came together and they've now 30 designated motorhome spaces in that village, and they're bringing into the economy nearly €2 million a year because of motorhome owners parking in that village and town. If you speak to anyone in Great Namana, they're like, they said it's after revolutionising the town. The amount of jobs and the amount of money that could be spent in Donegal Town, being honest with you, there's endless amount that could be. So Donegal County Council and Donegal Town Council, I think it's now time for them maybe to put their heads together to say, is there somewhere in the town where we could put, I don't know, 6 spaces initially or 10 spaces just motorhomes and charge €10 a night or €12 a night, and all the motorhomes want is a space to park, maybe grey water facilities and water, and that'd be it.
Yeah, maybe somewhere to plug in, because, you know, I think what happens is that I think it can be a little bit popular to criticise them, because there is a perception out there that you come in with your packed lunch, you eat your lunch, you dump your papers out the door and you're grey water and you drive off, right? I know that's not the case, but I think it kind of be, if you're looking for clicks and stuff, it's or whatever it might be. Look, I'm not saying people are doing that, but it's kind of popular to criticise. It's like teachers. It's kind of popular to criticise it, because you'll get a bit of traction, right? But really, really, you're of the view, and I think the council is of the view, because I presume your group submitted into the public consultation in Donegal a couple of years ago as to how we can all see the benefits of the money you bring in, but not tie up local back roads, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
exactly,
I think we really need to sort of say, right, this is a branch of tourism, and it needs to be, if people feel it's a bit chaos and haphazard now, we'll then put something in that's organised.
Exactly. Now, there's people passing out Donegal Town, I know, as I've heard of people saying, because sometimes it's very difficult to get parking in Donegal Town. Now, I know a lot of people park down there by the river, which is a in front of the tourist office, which is a brilliant facility. And, you know, once people park correctly and do the right thing, it's great. But I think it's now time for Donegal, the County Council and Town Council to look at putting designated spaces in Donegal Town, because the benefits outweigh the few negatives that may be there. The benefits for Donegal Town would be extra jobs in the area, would be up to €2 million extra in the economy, like the hub in Greg-na-Mana. Look at the likes of Cove down in Cork. For a very small amount of investment by Cork County Council to put 20 spaces below in Cove, they have a turnover now just on parking fees around €200,000 a year, which goes directly back into the Cove Town Council. And then there's about 1 to 1.5 million spent in the local economy by motorhome owners going to shops, restaurants, etc., etc.
Okay, so now, so obviously you represent motorhomes, right? So the majority that we'd see down on the quay there are effectively, you know, they're purpose-built motorhomes or converted transits or whatever it might be. Do you differentiate then for caravans? Do you know, in other words, when you talk about having 10 spaces for motorhomes, is it motorhomes you're talking of, or would someone be able to pull the caravan in there as well, pay their fee and go and explore for the day in their car? Like, do you as a group differentiate yourselves from the towing homes, so to speak?
We have to, because the towing homes, the caravan and a car are just too long altogether. So no matter what size of a parking bay you'd put, you just wouldn't have spaces that size.
So with that in mind then, we're not talking about a place. Now, some of the motorhomes, and it's not often you'll see, maybe tow a car and a trailer or have bikes or what have you. But really, for this to work, you need to be within walking distance, reasonable walking distance of the nightlife, the pubs and the restaurant. There's no point having a place a kilometre out, because then you have to source local taxis and all that type of stuff. So if something is to provide it specifically for motorhomes, and you've given an example there, it's a central location.
Indeed. And look at the likes of Clonmel. Only last week, Clonmel Town Council opened up 12 parking bays for motorhomes. And the positive response that the town has got, and the pictures that are going up online with the spaces full every night, is just amazing. All the positives outweigh the negatives. So we are specifically talking about motorhomes, because motorhomes are self-contained. You basically sit in the motorhome. There's no chairs, there's no awnings, whatever. You park in your space, you pay for your allocated space for 24 hours, and then you move on. Mm. Whereas caravans tend to go to a specific caravan site. They detach the caravan and leave it there and drive around in their cars, so they can tour around in their cars.
And there's a space beside it, and it's accommodated. Now, let me ask you, because we don't have a ton of time. There's not an actual official list, I'm sure, but is there can you grade counties on their friendliness to the benefits of the motorhome community? In other words, are there counties with reputation that, yes, of course, you can go there and the people are lovely, but you get more of a tone of an unwelcoming tone? Like, could you rank Donegal out of the 32 where we sit in terms of, you know, you'll still come, the scenery's beautiful, and of course we're lovely people, but in terms of sort of the more broader risk of a negative experience?
So Donegal, in my opinion, is one of the counties where they love people in motorhomes to come into their towns and villages, because they have a great reputation in Donegal. We do the right thing. Motorhome owners, 99.9% of us do the right thing. We want to do the right thing, and we want to spend our money in local economy. So Donegal would be one of the more welcoming counties. There's not very many that are unwelcoming as such. It's very, very positive in this country. But just, we are campaigning for facilities in this country for motorhome owners. There's an opportunity here for Tourism Ireland, for the Wild Atlantic Way, to put facilities in and bring the tourists in. And small towns and villages and areas, and a town like Donegal Town, will see an immediate increase in jobs, in expenditure into the area, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and we're talking about Donegal Town now, but it could be Buncrana, Letterkenny, Dunlow, Killybegs, and I'm not saying there aren't facilities there, so I don't want to be sort of suggesting there aren't, but what I'm saying is obviously we're talking now in the context of Donegal Town, but you would say, you know, it's not just what some would say is the gateway to the northwest, but there are other towns could benefit them as well. All right, well, it's out there now, Jason. We'll see what the public think. Listen, for the most part, I think those who are peed off are more inclined to get their phone out and text and complain, but that's fine too.
Yep.
But I would imagine the majority do see the benefits that you talk of. Have a lovely... Are you out on the road at the moment? No?
I am indeed. Yeah, we're down in Cork Town at the moment for a week with the Irish Camping and Caravan Club. Brilliant facility down there in Wexford. Yeah, tough life. Yeah,
right,
indeed.
Take care, Jason. Enjoy it. Jason Carmody there, chair of the Irish Motorhome Working Group. Okay, thanks to Caroline Oll, who researched and produced the show, and Niamh working on the programme as well, and tirelessly on social media. Both doing a great job. We're back with you doing it again tomorrow morning from 9. Stay tuned. Kevin Fury's up around the northwest after the news at 12.